You're listening to Omira and Borgeson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to the Omira and Borgeson Show. I'm Christina Borgeson.
And I'm Kelly Omira. Today, we're devoting the entire hour to money. More specifically, we're going to talk about President Biden's recent executive order titled Comprehensive Framework for Responsible Development of Digital Assets. To me, that's just a word salad for how best to track your money. As we look into the prospect of going digital, there's much to consider. Right now, interest rates are rising, the cost of food and rent is skyrocketing, and people are struggling to make ends meet. How will going digital make a difference in your life? And one can't help ask, qui bono? Who benefits? Every day, we see how commercial finance is changing. Phones swiped over keypads for purchases. No need for cash, credit, or debit. Microchips are inserted into hands to allow access to home and work. Discussions are in the works that may allow the Federal Reserve to create cash accounts for individuals. What would local commercial banks have to say about that and their deposits? More importantly, make no mistake, anything digital can be tracked. Every move you make can be tracked. Think about the animal microchips. It's no different with humans. Every financial transaction is tracked. What if you don't want to get chipped and digitized? Will you become a societal pariah? No? Think again. Remember what happened to anyone who refused the COVID jab. They were a danger to society. Terrorists. We're going to talk about these issues and more with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine is the president of Solari Inc., publisher of the Solari Report, and managing member of Solari Investment Advisory Services. Before that, Catherine served as managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street Investment Bank, Dillon Reed & Company. She also was assistant secretary of housing and urban development during the first Bush administration and was president of Hamilton Securities Group, Inc. Catherine designed and closed more than $25 billion in transactions and investments to date and has led portfolio and investment strategy for $300 billion worth of financial assets and liabilities. In short, Catherine Austin Fitz knows money and she knows how it works. Welcome, Catherine.
It's great. I didn't know we were going to be together. Christina didn't tell me that the great Omira was arriving.
We're getting the band back together.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We are. It's true. We're getting the band back together. This is fabulous.
So look, I'm just going to throw it out there, Catherine, let you get started. You know, what's your take on this global rush for digital money?
Digital concentration camps. I just want to let that word sink again. We're talking about creating digital concentration camps. It's a complete control system. So it's the end of currency. We're talking about creating financial transaction systems where there is absolutely no privacy, no matter what they say. And essentially, they'll be able to come into your bank account and take whatever money they want out. They'll have complete control. So if they don't want your money working more than 5 miles from your home, your money won't work more than 5 miles from your home. So I'll give you an example. And you ought to show this on the show. I think I showed it to you, Christina. If you go to Solari.com and go down to the commentary on the homepage called Cash Every Day, it's our campaign to encourage people to dial back the digital systems and go to cash. There are a couple of videos. The first one is 56 seconds, and it is the general manager of the BIS in Basel, Switzerland. So the Bank of International Settlements is the central bank of central bank. So it's the general manager of the BIS explaining exactly how CBDC will work in 56 seconds. You want to watch it?
Yeah, can you put it up?
I don't know if I can put it up.
Well,
I should.
I'm sure right now our engineer Alex is sweating bullets.
I should have done this. Okay, well, everybody should go watch that video. It's only 56 seconds.
Just give us a gist of what he says.
What he says is they can make the rules of how the money is used. They don't call it your money. They call it their expression of central bank liabilities. And they can set the rules on how it's going to be used, and they can enforce the rules. Now, Beneath that video is another video, which is Richard Werner, the top academic scholar in the world, in my opinion, on central banking. And he explains how what CBDC will look like. And he explains how the head of a central bank in Europe, who's very prominent fellow running a central bank, explained that it's going to be a chip inserted in your hand. Mark of the beast. So, wow. So between, and that's 2.5 minutes. And if you watch those two videos, you will understand, you know, ignore all the gobbledygook in the first couple of pages on the White House pronouncement. What we're talking is about complete central control. Last year, there was a nominee for the Office of Comptroller of Currency who got shot down thanks to Senator Kennedy and a few other very great performances by the senators who stopped it.
Some alert senators, yes.
Yeah, some alert senators stopped it. She had published a paper in the Vanderbilt Law Review in October, I think it was October 2020, basically saying it was really easy with CBDC for the feds to stop inflation. What they could do is just turn off bank accounts.
Well, how would that stop inflation?
Demand destruction. It kills demands for good because people can't get their money to buy
anything.
Interesting.
You know, I was listening to NPR the other day, and this finance guy, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, was saying, oh yes, that the way to lower inflation is to raise unemployment. So, because there would be fewer people with money to buy stuff. And I just thought to myself,
well, there would be, let me correct you, there would be fewer people with money, but there would also be fewer people.
Well, what what do you mean?
Well, like, because if people
unemployment
can't afford
kills
to buy
people?
Yes, it does. And the, you know, the studies show very clearly for every percentage of, you know, increased unemployment, you get an increase in deaths and lowering of life expectancy. There's a direct correlation.
Wow.
Here's the, you know, one way to understand the pandemic is as a management tool for, first of all, disaster capitalism. So you shut down all the small businesses, and that way the big businesses can pick up the market share, but also buy assets cheap, particularly because the Federal Reserve has floated lots of money to them. Okay, so it's an enormous opportunity. And I just posted a graph that I'm going to use in Money and Markets in the first week of October of the extraordinary explosion in the number of millionaires globally, particularly in the United States. So make no mistake about it, that centralization of capital was very profitable for the people who are centralizing control. And of course, the ultimate centralization is if you can get, in combination, control of the food supply, the energy supply, and bring out CBDCs, you've got complete and total control. And when I say digital concentration camps, I mean digital concentration camps, because you can see everything, you know, centrally, you can see everything money is attempted to be used for, and you can set the rules and you can shut it off. So if you can't, in an all digital system, again, they have spatial control. So your money can only work, you know, if you're only authorized to go 5 miles, your money will only work 5 miles from your home.
Catherine,
your car will not work beyond 5 miles to your home. You have complete control.
So one of the things what Christine and I were chatting about earlier was that the truckers during the strike in Canada, remember during the shutdowns, they simply turned off their bank accounts. Remember?
Right.
And I thought, you know, that's what we can expect. I think if they don't like how you vote, they don't like what you're doing, they can cut off your account. You just don't have any access to your money.
But now they have to get the banks to play ball, and it's a complicated process for them to identify who's who and get the instructions out. With CBDC, it can be like grease lightning. But remember, right now, if I have a bank account, they can shut it on or off, but they can't determine, you know, very specific rules about where I can and cannot spend money. So I can go down to the bank, I can get cash out, and I can go anywhere down the street and transact any way I like. But with CBDC, we're talking about money where, you know, if they don't want you shopping at certain stores, if they don't want you buying certain things, you know, if they determine that certain foods you should not be able to eat, if they just want you eating synthetic food, then your money will not work to, you know, at the farmer's market. I mean, we're talking about the ability to use AI and software to do tracking, I mean, already we have it. We have AI and software that can track every individual 24/7 with teams. Everybody has the equivalent of, you know, Stasi teams 24/7 watching them. It's just AI and software instead of other humans. Not to say that humans don't get involved in the control system, but when you marry the current control grid, and what's important to understand is CBDC is the last component that snaps into place and turns the control grid that they've been building for 30 years into the digital concentration camps. And the reason I'm so adamant about warning about CBDCs is you want to back out of the control grid before they snap the final pieces in. Because once they snap the final pieces in, you know, we are talking about moving into a world which is utterly unknown to most people in the Western world. You're talking about slavery.
Okay. I just want to figure out how close we are to that snapping point, because I'm looking at these reports and the average cost of heating a home is going up 17%. Groceries are going up 13.5%, rent 6.7%, gasoline 25.6%, airline fares 33.4%, new cars 10%, electricity 15.8%. So people are being impoverished right now. So they're being, their cash reserves or money are already dwindling. So is that all part of this plan somehow?
It's part of what's called the Going Direct Reset. The Going Direct Reset was voted on in 2019 by the central bankers. And it's a way of consolidating a process that started in the U.S. fiscal 1998 called the financial coup. So a decision was made in the 90s that the American governmental mechanism didn't work. And the solution was basically to just privatize the government on a just do it method by taking up the debt and sucking all the assets out. And of course, the question is, where did those assets go? But essentially, a decision was made, okay, rather than meet the baby boomers' retirement demands, let's just take all the money. And then by the time they're ready to retire, you know, we will fill up their pension funds with IOUs from the government and then inflate away the value. So it was a way of essentially engineering the money out before you had to make good on those retirement bets. It was a way of negating the retirement bets without most people being able to figure out what was going on. Now, let me just stop you for a second, because starting in 2000, there was one journalist on the whole planet who saw what was happening, who understood what was happening, and wrote about it and tried to warn people for years. And that was Kelly O'Meara. Kelly O'Meara you wrote 9 or 10 articles on both the 21 trillion, it's now 21 trillion, then it was sort of $4.5 trillion on the missing money and the suppression of the gold market at the same time. Remember?
I do remember, so, yes.
Right. And the big answer from the body politic was a big yawn.
Exactly. Right. Well, and that's why when I first reported on, if you remember, I think it was 1.3 trillion that was missing. So 21 years later, it's 21 trillion that's missing at the Pentagon. So nobody really cares. And I think we found that out as we did those articles. And I want to thank you, Catherine, because it was under your tutelage that I learned how to read the government financial statements, which is no easy thing to do.
Yeah, I know.
And define to find the missing money. So, you know, thank you for that.
Well, let me ask you something. Christina, if you care enough to look into that $21 trillion, isn't that a dangerous prospect for you?
No.
Well, no. I mean, no. All I was doing at the time is just reporting that, you know, according to the, you know, Inspector General, they're the ones that write down what's missing. I didn't make up the numbers.
So no, but you... that. Yeah, but you also reported, because you asked why, how could this happen? And they gave you some response that sounded pretty lame to me about how their systems don't communicate with each other.
Yeah. Remember, Catherine, they said that the reason the Pentagon couldn't account for its money is because its computers weren't talking to each other. So the next time I did the article, the following year, I interviewed the Comptroller General of the United States. And I said, you know, if it's a matter of, you know, the computer systems aren't talking to one another, who has the contract for that? And he goes, wow, you know, that's a good question.
Oh, it never crossed his mind?
He didn't know.
But what's funny is all the companies that had the contract, they had no problem producing audited financial statements and filing them with the SEC every year. No problem at all.
Right.
Yeah, but then, ladies, you're laughing, but I'm trying. I mean, they know this is part of the cover
know.
Up. I mean, this
yes,
is part of the cover
know.
Up, isn't it? To say, well, our systems aren't talking to each other.
It's very complicated. It's very, very complicated. It's
and
really
purposely.
Hard and very complicated.
All right.
Well, no. Before we go to break, I just want to say this. Catherine came up with the best answer when the Pentagon said they couldn't account for their money because their computer systems didn't work. And she said, well, hey, how about we go back to pencil and paper? That worked for about 60 years.
Touche. All right. We're going to take a break. This is Omira and Borgeson on TNT Radio Live. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT Radio's Trish Wood.
Colonel McGregor was saying that he really believed that this was going to be won by Russia. And it looked like this week that maybe Ukraine actually got a leg up militarily. I know never to believe this stuff, but I'm wondering what your take on it is.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any question that Ukraine did win some severe victories here. It looks like they lost the entire northern half of Luhansk there in eastern Ukraine. So that's a severe setback. You know, the question is, does that mean that now Putin's going to negotiate on Ukraine's terms? Does that mean that now he's going to double down in the war? Or he's just going to try to hang on to the status quo? I mean, the Ukrainian government's not going to stop. And the Americans and the Americans' allies all across Europe continue to arm and train the Ukrainian forces. They call it a special military operation and not a full-scale war. But more and more, politically, the framing is being changed inside Russian media that this isn't an invasion of Ukraine anymore. It's a war between Russia and NATO in Ukraine.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Omira and Borgeson Show. We're continuing our conversation with money genius Catherine Austin Fitz. So, Catherine, I mean... you're trying to get people to hang on to their cash and to deal in all cash to counteract this, right? But does that seem so like, to me, it kind of seems like a drop in the bucket.
No, not at all. So I used to have a friend who ran for governor in Tennessee. He said, you think a snowflake is fragile until you realize enough of them can get together and shut down New York City. If we take, you know, it's not just using cash, it's dialing back the whole digital system. So dramatically reducing our dependency on the digital system. So I want to bring up a couple of things, because it's very important to understand that bringing in CBDCs is not as easy as it sounds. And I want to bring up a couple of the critical issues that the central bankers are running into in trying to bring in CBDCs, because Kelly O'Meara is going to understand a lot about this one. The first one is our economy runs on a huge amount of organized crime proceeds. So the US is the number one launderer of dirty money in the world, okay? The problem with CBDC is then your whole retail transaction system, you have complete surveillance and complete control, and you can control what the money can be spent for. So how are you going to keep a couple hundred billion dollars of drug sales going where you have complete transparency? And I bring this up because I don't know if Kelly remembers this, but once upon a time, Kelly, do you remember when you had lunch with the DEA guy who'd just been retired, and he said, let's face it, all the money batches, all the wires batch and go through the New York Fed. They know where every penny is. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
You do remember
But I also remember you talking about it, saying, you know, look, they keep saying we have a drug problem. And even today with the fentanyl coming in through Mexico via the Chinese, you know, you said, look, there's no way all that can get into this country without the help of the government, because we're talking tractor trailer loads of it.
Right. So a missile can't get through, a plane can't get through, because we're spending $850 billion a year to make sure we have the most impenetrable, you know, military defense. But hundreds of truckloads of fentanyl or cocaine can come flying back and forth, and nobody, we're all helpless to stop it. It's all run by three black teenagers in Harlem, and, you know, and they're, wow. They're, we can't do anything about them.
You know, Catherine, I wanted to ask you, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but so let's pretend, you know, that this really happens and everybody in the world goes to a digital, you know, financial systems. And, you know, to me, that's zeros and ones. Okay. What happens to the dollar being the reserve currency? Do you even need a reserve currency anymore?
So that's really a military question, because your goal ultimately is to get $8 billion on your going through your channel and your system. I mean, and so I was going to bring up one of the key design challenges presented by a CBDC is at some point, depending on how you build it, you know, you don't need the Federal Reserve. You can just run everything from the BIS in Switzerland, right?
Yeah, but that's not how they're going to roll this out. I mean, clearly the Federal Reserve and you know what, the Exchequer or the, you know, Bank of England, they're not going to just sit back and let.
Well, but I will bet you a dollar that the New York banks are quite nervous about what the relationship is going to be between the New York Fed and the BIS as this rolls out.
Okay,
because remember,
so
So
let's say that they're able to get the regulations changed and so forth and so on, and the Fed will actually set up individual accounts for people. Well, then they don't need the community banks anymore, right?
Right. So one of the chief, if you read the technology paper that the White House just published, one of the chief issues is called intermediaries, which means, do you need local banks, or do you need banks who are dealing with the retail customer? In other words, if the retail customer has a problem with their CBDC, if something's not working, if their app is broken, you know, are they really going to call the Fed and ask for tech support?
Yeah, really.
Right. So the question is, you know, because L.L. Bean is famous for customer service, but the Fed is not. You know, they've always been a wholesaler. So the idea of the Fed handling tech support for 325 million Americans, let alone you know, billions of people globally? That's a very big question. And so the question for the Fed is, and yes, in theory, they can just open a direct account for everybody, but who's going to handle the relationship with the customer? And are you going to have intermediaries? And if I were the banks, I'd be exceptionally nervous because
let me ask a question that may be stupid, okay, say we go to this digital thing and we find ourselves enslaved, can't access our money beyond 5 miles and so on and so forth. Well, human beings being what they are people, why won't they just start bartering with each other and start their own local currencies and all that
stuff?
Will.
I mean, they will. And one of the reasons, one of the reasons they want to come out with a universal basic income and a social credit system and get control of the food supply is so people can't do that. The reason you want to control the food supply and basically create a universal basic income is that will give you control. So they want to stop the local currencies. They want to stop the barter. I mean, all of that should have been happening, you know, much more in the last 20 years. And one of the reasons it hasn't is when you see those things develop in local communities, the next thing you know, you got the government showing up and handing out grants and money all over the place.
Well, look what's happening in the Netherlands with the farmers. I mean, look what's happening there. They're shutting them down. They're selling their land because of climate, you know, issues, right?
Well, but
so it's well in force.
Well, what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to take the land, and they want to start by taking the farmers' land because then they get control of the food system. And so they're stealing the farmers' land, and they're coming up with all this complex gobbledygook that basically says, you know, because you want to make sure after you steal the farmers' land, you're going to steal, you know, there's going to be the next round of people's land. And before you steal the people's land, you want them to believe, oh, it won't happen to me because I'm not a farmer. You know, the question is, how do you kill the herd 10% at a time without the herd realizing, oh, you know, they're killing all, you know, they're coming for all of us, so let's stop it now. So that's why you come up with all these complex systems that explain away, you know, what you're really up to. Because you can't just announce, look, we want to control the food system, and so we're going to steal the land from all the farmers, and after we do that, we're going to come after and steal your land. You can't say that.
Well, I'm sure the fact that Bill Gates is now the largest farmland owner in the country right now has raised some eyebrows, and I think people are starting to think about this. I don't know. I think in France you're only allowed to own a certain amount, even as a farmer, a certain amount of farmland. And I really think that there should be a limit to how much farmland any one individual should own or can own, because that's concentrating too much power into the hands of
few people
in terms of the food supply.
If the money system is run clean, you know, the market will take care of that. In other words, the concentration you're watching is from running the Treasury and the Federal Reserve, you know, outside the law and doing it for decades. And when you do that for decades, you create this kind of concentration of wealth, and then you get these effects. And it's a little bit like, you know, when you have a hole in the boat, do you want to solve the problem by, you know, getting more spoons and emptying the water? Do you just want to plug the hole? So the problem we have that's creating all these different symptoms is we have essentially a very significantly corrupt and inefficient financial system, you know, but it reflects a secret governance system. And, you know, if you look at all the different stories that you and Kelly have covered, you know, it all keeps coming back to the issue of who is Mr. Global and why is Mr. Global, you know, using organized crime and corruption to centralize, you know, control of resources.
Well, that's the fastest way to do it.
Right.
And that's another thing that I'm thinking about, too. I'm sure I'm not the only taxpayer who pays my taxes every year to this government that's starting to think, you know, I don't feel this government is serving me. I feel like this government is serving World Economic Forum.
The government is breaking the law. So I come back, you know, civilization rests on the rule of law. The government has broken the financial management laws in an extreme way since 1998. You know, that's a long time. And if you go to ourmoney.salieri.com/taxation, you will get, and it's public. So I know you got our hard copy on taxation. I'll hold it up. It's right here. I show it every chance I get.
Amazing report.
Right, it's available on at what this comes down to is really what are we and our state legislators going to do, because you cannot keep pouring this amount of money into a system which is operating outside the law. I mean, it's operating in a criminal way, and we can't keep paying taxes and have that money used in a way which is destroying our families, destroying our communities, and not properly funding our infrastructure, and on and on and on, all the things you know about.
So are you suggesting that the states should take matters into their hands and say?
Yes, yes.
And how would they do that?
So if you go to Salieri.com, I just did an interview with Pete Kennedy. It's under the special Salieri reports on actions that, it's called You're Stronger Than You Think You Are. It's things to ask your state legislature to do. So it's an agenda. Pete Kennedy is the host of our food series, and he is a litigator who's one of the founders of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. And it's Pete and I talking money and food, money and food, money and food, money and food, because you have to do both together. It's you know, you have to do money, you have to do food, and talking about what the state legislatures can do to create the conditions of both food and financial sovereignty so people can rebuild the economy. We can rebuild the economy, Christina, but we need a playing field where there is respect for the rule of law. If you have a government with governmental authority that is acting in significantly criminal ways, you know, it destroys the economy. It makes it impossible for businesses to build and grow. It makes it impossible for entrepreneurs to start businesses.
And that's what we're seeing right now. That's exactly what's going on right now.
Right. Well, they're systematically using criminal methods to destroy all the small businesses.
Explain that. Just briefly, what you just said.
It's very simple. You declare a pandemic, right? And you say all the small businesses are not essential, and all the big publicly traded stock businesses can keep operating. So you go into a shopping mall, there are 20 small businesses that are not allowed to open, and then Costco's next door, and Costco gets all the business, right? And so Costco's stock goes up, and the investors who are in Costco make a whole bunch of money, and those 20 businesses, and literally, I saw this, I forget which channel it is, Andrew Sorkin explaining that science supported the ideas the magic virus would get you in the small businesses, but you were safe in Costco, right? I'm serious.
Yeah.
Rick Santelli had his mouth wide open. He was just like, are you out of your mind?
I love Rick.
No. The science supports that. So, but what the pandemic was is you shut down all the small businesses, you consolidate their market share into Amazon and the big box stores.
Right.
And then you have a whole bunch of small business. I think in San Francisco, 49% of the small businesses shut down. I mean, if you look at the numbers of how many small businesses will shut down by the end of the year, you know, and there are thousands of different policies that cause this. So, but, you know, the pandemic was a very simple example. What you see is you see a war on small business. So I think the pandemic will have shut down something like 30% of the businesses in the country.
Yeah. And they're not coming back for sure. I mean, I know that in my local area alone, how many restaurants and small businesses have shut down, and they're just sitting empty now.
Right. Right. And Christina, that is demand destruction, because you're the Fed, you print a huge amount of money, it triggers inflation. You give that money to your friend, you shut down the small businesses and declare the pandemic. That means you can pick up assets cheap, right? But you destroy demand because so many people are hurting. you know, and that helps offset the monetary inflation.
So, and when Bill Gates talks about, you know, the next pandemic is coming, and we know it, the next pandemic is coming. What phase is that, Catherine?
So, you know, there are many ways you can play the disaster capitalism game. A pandemic is one of them. Remember, part of what you're trying to do if you are running things is you're trying to keep people from facing the blunt facts. Okay, so you don't say we're just going to steal the farmer's land. You say, oh, we have climate change and nitrogen this and complicated rules, and we need to, you know, and people want to believe that it's not that evil. And so they say, well, you know, we're worried about the environment, you know, and so there's this confusion that causes people to go along.
And so climate change is part of the ruse?
Absolutely. Go back 50 years. There's a wonderful Swedish researcher who's tracked it all the way back to the beginning. When the, you know, when the Fed came out and fiat currency developed, one of the things the people who ran it knew was that at some point you had to have a, you know, a better control of resources. It wasn't going to last forever. And they started, the Rockefellers started building the train tracks for technocracy and sort of control of resources, carbon-based, you know, in the 40s and 50s. I mean, that started right after World War II. Jacob Nordegaard is a fabulous Swiss researcher. He's just published two books, one called The Rockefellers, the other called Global Coup d'Etat. I just did an interview with him about 2 months ago on Solari. And he's literally tracked the whole development of this essentially technocratic control system. And it's, you know, it's been building for decades and decades. And in one sense, it's very clever because we all love the environment. You know, it's a beautiful planet. We love the environment. We love the earth. We care about it. We don't want to see the environment damaged or destroyed. And yet we have an economic model that is very, you know, is very harmful to the environment. And the question is, of course, how to change it. And there are many ways to change it, which I believe are quite positive. The way they're talking about changing it is total top-down control. And let me just bring something up, and I've discussed this with you before, because Haiti is really a part of the story. If you go back and study the African-American slave trade, they canceled, in my opinion, they canceled the slave trade for two reasons. One was they could not perfect collateral. In other words, if you financed a slave in North Carolina, and then the commodity markets tanked, and let's say you the London banks were financing at a 50% loan to value. So somebody in a plantation in North Carolina buys a slave at auction for $1,000. They can finance $500 through the banks. The correspondent bank in North Carolina places it with a bank in the city. You know, securitization in a sense was happening even then. So then what happens is the commodity markets trash. The plantation owner sells the slave west, and you, the bank, can't figure out, you know, which slave is yours, and you can't prove that's your collateral. So there were real collateral problems. Every time the commodity markets crashed, you know, they'd get defrauded on their collateral. So that was number one. Number two, they couldn't put down the revolt in Haiti, and they were seriously worried that it would spread, and they tried hard. The Haitians beat them. Again and again. I mean, several times. It was very remarkable.
Kicked Napoleon's butt. Yep.
Yep, they did. Right. And that scared them because, you know, if that spreads, they were in real trouble. So they canceled the slave trade. But you have to understand two things have happened between satellites and digital technology. They've solved the collateral problem. If they can put a chip on you, then they don't need a gold standard or a quasi-oil standard. They can use a human standard. They can collateralize CBDCs on the blockchains with humans, right? So,
yeah.
So they solve the collateral problem, and now with satellites and surveillance and money that tracks you every second, you know, they don't have, they can put down the revolution, so to speak. So if you look at the reason they solved the slave trade, they've solved those two problems. Now they can kick it up against, but on scale.
Well, let me ask you this, Catherine. you and I have talked about this in the past. What we don't really need the Federal Reserve. Is that right?
We don't need them.
Right. And
a sovereign government can issue its own currency.
Right. And we do, and through the Treasury. Through the Treasury right. Department, we print all the dollars. The Federal Reserve says,
well,
okay,
the mint prints it, but it says Federal Reserve note at the top. So it's not a Treasury. It's, you know, the reason you need the Federal Reserve is so you can create a bubble surrounded by secrecy. So,
yes,
so the
course.
Federal Reserve, there are certain functions that require secrecy. And some of them are legitimate, and some of them we would describe as maybe not so legitimate. But if you want to create the kind of bubbles that we're creating, you need that secrecy, and the Federal Reserve permits that secrecy.
What kind of secrecy do we need here? What talk to me about
necessary
secrecy.
If we're going to be the global lead, in 1998, the Department of Justice told Kelly that the U.S. economy laundered $500 billion to $1 trillion of all dirty money. Now, that was before financial fraud really exploded, so it's much more now. But you need secrecy if you are going to hold out the image of a financial system that follows the rule of law, which is what you need for liquidity. You need people to believe that you're lawful, because that's what creates financial liquidity. But if you're going to add to it the benefits of $1 trillion plus of dirty money, you need secrecy so that you can do the two-step. You can say, we're lawful, but we're laundering $1 trillion of dirty money. Right? You need an overt, you need a covert.
Covert, yeah. We have to take a break right now, but when we come back, we'll continue this discussion. This is Omira and Borgeson on TNT Radio Live. We'll be right back after these messages.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I can't tell you how much better I'll sleep tonight after learning some new information about the state of the U.S. Air Force. Fox News Digital reporting, a diversity and inclusion training program at the Air Force Academy in Colorado instructs cadets to use words that include all genders and refrain from saying things like mom and dad. The slide presentation titled Diversity and Inclusion, What It Is, Why We Care, and What We Can Do advises cadets to use person-centered and gender-neutral language when describing individuals. Some family members are headed by single parents, it says. Grandparents, foster parents, two moms, two dads, etc. Consider parent or caregiver instead of mom and dad. The presentation says use words that include all genders, folks or y'all instead of guys, partner instead of boyfriend or girlfriend. The story says at the beginning of the training, cadets are assured that what's said here stays in the room. Thankfully, at least one cadet was so disturbed by this woke crap that, well, he spilled the beans. Now let's end it all. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Don't want the government to know what you're buying? Use cash. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back here on Omira and Borgeson, and that's exactly what Catherine's advice is to everybody. Use cash.
Use cash.
So even our ads agree with you. So, Catherine, you said you want to talk about interoperability and fees, and I don't know what that means, but I'm sure you're going to tell us.
So we were talking about some of the difficulties of bringing in CBDCs, and just remember, the Fed is on record as saying they will not implement a CBDC without authorizing legislation. There is no way under the law they can do a CBDC now without new legislation. Now, in theory, the Treasury might be able to do it. They might play a two-step through Treasury, but in my opinion, they need authorizing legislation to do it if they're going to do a CBDC that makes any sense at all. So, and getting that legislation is going to start a war like you've never seen. We discussed, are they going to squeeze out the banks? So you've got thousands of banks that have every reason to want to stop this. That's number one. But number two, interoperability means how will the CBDCs relate with the credit card companies? How will they relate with the online payment systems? Because in fact, if you can do everything directly through the bank account at the Fed, you know, all those companies can just go away. So yeah. if this is the system going to be interoperable with all those systems, and if it is, if it doesn't need those systems, how are those systems going to get fees? So if you look, think of the financial transaction system as a huge fee flow, and they're going to put forward authorizing legislation that takes that entire fee flow, which thousands of companies and employees and investors feed off of, and they're going to throw it up in the air like a deck of cards saying, you know, we're going to cut it way back, or we're going to cut it in half, or we're going to cut it entirely, and then we're going to divvy it out in different ways. And so if their system is operable with Visa, you know, Visa's a winner. If it's not operable with MasterCard, they're a loser. Now, I'm grossly oversimplifying, but when you go in for that legislation, that's going to be one of, I mean, Kelly knows what it's like when you propose legislation that turns an entire industry's fee flow and income flow upside down.
Yeah.
So Kelly's been a staffer in Congress. She knows. And
yeah, it's a bloodbath.
Yeah, it's a bloodbath. So this is going to be, you know, and to me, this is an opportunity. I call it the Midianite thing, after a story in the Bible where the Midianites kill each other. Yeah, so this is going to be interesting. So interoperability and fee flow is another challenge.
What about Catherine? What about the Bank of International Settlements? What role does that play?
So that plays a very important role. A lot of people think of the BIS as sort of a regulatory institution, but something very magical happened in 1994, Kelly, that I missed. And if we had known about it, the missing money story, it would have changed our lives. We probably wouldn't be alive.
Oh, wow.
In 1994, the Fed bought shares in BIS. They had declined doing so for many decades. Now, and Greenspan and the New York Fed president were on the board. And what that did is that gave the Fed access to the biggest money-moving pipes on the planet. In other words, the BIS can move securities, it can move bank deposits, it can move gold, it can move data, it can move documents, and it can do it all behind sovereign immunity. Complete secret, no enforcement. And what I didn't realize was, if you're the New York Fed and you're issuing treasury securities for the US government as a primary dealer, or your members and owners are, you know, and you're managing the New York Treasury accounts, it's a very easy step to just move that money into a BIS account, at which point it can move all over the world behind sovereign immunity.
Wow. Wow.
Exactly. Now it gets even better. If you look at the BIS, financials, it can hold assets under management and manage pools of capital off balance sheet. So you could move $21 trillion out of the treasury at the Chase Manhattan back, out of the treasury account, move it into the BIS account, and put it anywhere in the world off balance sheet on the BIS balance sheet behind sovereign immunity.
And no one would be able to track it or
no
look
one,
at it or.
No.
So
no. And
wait.
It gets even better. Let me keep going. So if you look at the, I want to tell you two things. If you look at the BIS powers, they have the power to maintain deposits and assets for themselves, for their 63 members, which are central banks and monetary authority, and then for something that says other. Other.
What's other?
That's, of course, that's one of the great unanswered questions on the planet. Who is other? So Kelly and I could talk about the disappearing dividend, but my question is it disappearing into other at the BIS? But that's a question. So let me keep going. The BIS had a committee called Financial Stability Board, and they, at a certain point, they created it as a separate Swiss association that is hosted at the BIS and protected by their sovereign immunities. And what they did is they created three lists: systemically important banks, systemically important financial institutions, and systemically important payment systems. And from everything we can tell, it appears that they have extended their sovereign immunities to those banks, those insurance companies, and those payment systems, which means they are also protected by global sovereign immunity from sovereign governments. Now, if you watch John Titus's, he's got a YouTube channel called Best Evidence, and he made a video called All the Plenary's Men about the HSBC settlement in 2012, where they basically walked away from no prosecution of any bank officers, no prosecution of the banks. And he is able to show that what protected them was the systemically important bank designation by the Bank of International Settlements. And he walks you through the document trail and the correspondence and shows you how HSBC was operating under the protection of its designation as a systemically important bank.
So how does that affect, you know, that's big information.
So how does that affect us? Here's how it affects you. What we're talking about is we're talking about creating a breakaway civilization where a group of banks can steal $21 trillion from our government, put it in a separate civilization where we have no legal redress, and keep it there and basically use it to change our government system. It's part of a coup d'etat.
Wow.
Because
now, here's the thing, though. If, I mean, there are so many of us and so few of them. Aren't there actions we can take that essentially neutralize their wealth?
Yes, there are a tremendous number of actions we can take. And, you know, you think they sound like they're little, but they're not. I mean, the first thing we can do is we can turn off our TV and stop watching their lies. I mean, just save time by tuning out their lies. It's a complete waste of your time. That's number one. Number two, we can shift our money. We can shift our money out of the big New York banks and into local banks. That gives them the more deposits they have, the more political power they have, the more they can slow this down, the more they can have a seat at the table for these negotiations. The third thing we can do is we can just dial back on digital. We can use cash. We can turn off our smartphones. We can throw our smartphones out. I mean, because once, you know, this all depends on the surveillance delivered by those technologies. So we can turn that off. We can shift our money.
Well, what
in
kind
other
of
ways.
Phone do you have? Wait, what kind of phone can you have if you don't have a smartphone?
So I have a smartphone, but I keep it in a Faraday bag turned off. I never have it on. You know,
What's a Faraday bag?
A Faraday bag is a, you know, it's like a pocket or a envelope for a phone that stops and blocks any transmission.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
I want one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have one for my laptop. I have one for my phone. I've got everything wrapped in a Faraday cage.
All right. So what else?
So go to takeaction2021.solaria.com. We have an article called Loosen Technology's Grip that Corey Lynn wrote for us about all the different things you can do to just put digital technology in a place where you can use it for you, but it can't compromise your privacy and your safety. So another thing I strongly recommend people do is go to Solari, put in the words mind control, and pull up a set of links about the mind control that's being used on the digital systems and understand that technology exists so you can protect yourself against it, and particularly your children, because it's having devastating impacts on our children.
Well, Catherine, I want to ask you, when do you think this is all going to come to fruition? If it does, I mean, are they close? Are they far? What's, you know?
They're moving very quickly. So the BIS has created 7 innovation hubs around the world, and those innovation hubs enjoy treaties that give them sovereign immunity. And they are helping to facilitate central banks all over the world prototyping CBDC. The Chinese are the closest to having a, you know, they have a prototype going, and they're the closest. And one of the things that the people in the West will tell you is they're pushing, you know, they don't want the Chinese or the Russians bringing up a system, let alone putting gold behind it and sucking huge amounts of money away from the dollar. So, you know, there's pressure to deal with that one way or another. But if you
we've got 15 seconds left. We've got to go. We're going to try and bring George Eliason on Sunday and talk to him so we can talk about war on Monday. Catherine, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks,
always
Catherine.
Always fascinating.